No, I don't.
I never heard of $5 million down there.
What was the story about Paulus getting killed? Was it in Lexington?
No, he got killed right down in the bottom down there. And the story, I knew the fellow that killed him.
You knew Everett Rigsby?
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
And actually what happened was Paulus, this guy was had the dice and he was shooting the dice. And anyway, Paulus had all the money in there and this guy made his point. And Paulus just reached over and got the money. He drug it into himself, and this guy, bang, killed him. See? And they was down in one of them buildings that had that old beaver board on the side.
Yeah.
It said, fellas just went out through the beaver board.
Made a door in there. Huh?
Yeah, there's a group of them shooting dice together, see.
But Bixie, who Dad knew, who was in a moving business here, told me the story that was the other one? Was he one of the boys?
Yeah, Carlos.
And actually, somewhere wherever they were at, this guy's car broke down on a railroad track or something, and they stopped and helped him. They were on their way to pick up their father, and they didn't know who he was at the time.
So they actually picked up and
helped? They actually helped him get his car off the tracks or whatever had happened to his car. But Bixie, I remember telling us, he moved some stuff for us somewhere one time. You know, was talking about, they got to talking about old times and about the shootout and things.
But I don't think the fellow that killed Paulus ever went to penitentiary. I don't remember.
I think he got off on that. I don't think he ever did go.
But I'll tell you another story about Paulus that happened before my time, though. They, on the South Frankfort Bridge, they hung three blacks right off the end of that bridge one time. Something happened out at the carnival out there in Mary's Bottom or whatever it was. Do you remember something about that?
I remember the incident, but I didn't.
They beat up some roustabouts or something.
I wasn't familiar with
one time. So some white guys, so they went and got those black guys and
did them in. How was Paulus connected? Was Paulus connected with that incident? You said you remembered.
Yeah, he was connected with it. He was.
They wasn't very.
I remember being in some place one night in Bixie. That was Paulus' son. Run in there, and he was trying to get up a posse to go.
He was number three boy. Bixie's the one that wrapped the fire truck around that stump light up on Main and.
Yeah.
Ann Street.
But
he worked for the fire department.
But it was kind of like the old Western days when he'd round up a posse to go hang somebody. Bixie wanted to get someone to go with him. Somebody had done something. I don't know what it was.
Well, there was a story where Bixie's first wife claimed that she was insulted by a group of blacks and shoved from the sidewalk. And Bixie and Carlos, I think, went down in there and mixed it up with the blacks. This would have been right after World War II. I mean, just had a Donnybrook with them and decided that they would get up a posse and go back in and avenge his wife's honor. And
well, Bixie was always like that. He was kind of fiery. Carlos was pretty well settled. In fact, he was representative from Franklin County.
Yeah, state representative.
Yeah. And Lysis, I didn't hear much out of him. I don't even remember what Lysis' name was.
Bixie shot that Brooks boy. But the bullet just went into the fleshy part of his arm here.
RT or Buster?
Buster. He shot Buster.
Buster was.
But you can get yourself shot.
He wasn't as solid a citizen as RT was.
How did the blacks and the whites get along down in the bottom?
Oh, fine. They lived right next door to each other. No problem.
Yeah, I've heard many people say they felt there was better race relations at that time than there is.
Than there is now, really.
Yeah.
I was trying to think of. There's one of Paulus's children, the youngest one that's still alive.
Yeah.
Lives out of state someplace. Somewhere up in Illinois or something.
I don't remember his name. I didn't know him.
You know, the restaurants in Frankfurt, there was Frank McDonald and Hauser's was the main restaurant.
Yeah.
Manhattan.
They was confliction amongst the two of them. They, when Hauser put anything on sale, or McDonald would follow him. If McDonald puts on sale, then Hauser would follow him.
But McDonald was the first one that built tables and whatnot in the back room so that the blacks could come up the alley and come in and they could eat in the restaurant. Of course, there was all the restaurants had black cooks. They were cooking the food.
Yeah, I've always heard that one or the other of them built a house over on Kepler Avenue. And the other one went over there and bought a lot right next to him and built a house bigger than the first one.
Yeah, that's where Strom.
The two that
insurance
sit right there.
Places,
Side
by side.
What about the dance boat?
The old Summer Girl?
Summer Girl. That was the battleship.
Grand
the fights would start this, you know, they parked that thing just back of the post office right there. But before you could get to the bridge, the singing bridge there, well, the fight would start.
Yeah. Grand Dean's father operated that thing. And I worked with Grand.
Did you ever see
two or three years.
The Summer Girl?
It had
faintly remember
it. It had a little old two-cylinder engine on it, or one-cylinder, I believe it was. It was one of them jobs that go chug, pow, 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 chug. And every time it chugged, the boat would chug. They just danced right on.
Yeah.
Well, am I tuckering you guys out? I don't want to go on too long.
I tell you, Judge Mitchell, the sheriff, was on the boat one night. And Judge had a bottle of moonshine, and they arrested Judge for having this bottle of moonshine. Well, Judge, he's about half drunk. They didn't handcuff him or anything. They just arrested him. He was under arrest, so he just went over and jumped off, see.
Jumped in the river.
Jumped in the river. And they put the boat in, and Judge was telling me this himself. He says, I was sitting up there in the back of a tree watching them. They were looking for me, see. And,
What did they do to you if they arrested you for having a bottle, or if you had a still? I mean, what did they really do to you?
Well, if you had a still, if you was making whiskey, they could send you to Atlanta.
But how, I mean, how long did you?
6 months or a year, depending on the jury. It was a federal offense. See, prohibition was federal. And anybody fooling with whiskey in any way, if they were arrested, they could be tried for a federal offense. But there was an awful lot of stuff.
Like a little more drink?
Oh, I'm fine, thank you.
That,
yeah, I'm fine.
That Summer Girl thing, they were supposed to go up about to where the interstate bridges cross now, about up to Glens Creek. But they'd get about half drunk before they ever left the berth where they tied down there. And they'd go up about the pump house and drift around a little while, and everybody's having a good time, and a lot of music and a lot of noise. And they just sit up there for an hour or so and just kind of drift, and then turn around and come back down to dock and dock up, and that was it.
When was the Summer Girl operating? Was that the 30s or the 40s?
It was in the 30s. About started in about 30, or maybe a little before 30, the late 20s.
I rode the Summer Girl sometime, but there's always a fight.
Well,
started.
They had parties on it. I was in the high school band, and the band went up on it a time or two. And they had that as the dancers, and we had a boat, and a lot of times I'd go up along by the side of it, going up the river at night, listen to the music.
I think we've actually, in the photographic collection at the Historical Society, had pictures of the Summer Girl docked up at Frankfort.
It was a successful operation, and of course, he run the concession, Mr. Dean run the concession stand.
Yeah.
And he sold sandwiches and drinks, soft drinks.
Was he kin to Billy Dean and all those?
No, I don't think
Billy
so.
Billy Dean used to tow oil.
Okay.
He had a son, Frank, in Lexington, that had a big towing business in the garage up there, Lexington. He was killed in Versailles. A cable snapped on the winch truck that was pulling a truck out, and the cable snapped and cut him in two.
But the Summer Girl actually itself was just a barge.
Yeah.
And it was pushed by a little boat, and if I remember correctly, it had curtains. It was open.
It was. It had curtains.
They had canvas on the side that they could roll up, and if it's summertime, it was a nice, cool place coming up the river, I guess.
They always had to take a police officer of some kind with them, generally a deputy sheriff, because they expected trouble every time they'd leave. And generally they had.
It was the battleship.
After it had made one of its trips, there was a fight broke out in front of the old post office, the library now. And there was a boy killed, stabbed with a knife. And I believe Biscuit Lee, wasn't it, that spent some time in jail or in prison over that? Do you remember the...
I remember the incident.
But there was three or four of them involved in it, and for some reason or other, they put the rep on him. I believe it was Biscuit Lee.
Yeah, Biscuit, when he got out of the penitentiary, he opened up that bowling alley.
Yeah.
Right up there.
It's hard to imagine Frankfort in this time, you know. I just... It's hard to conceive of it.
Well, back in those days, most everybody that operated a business downtown lived downtown, up over the business. In fact, when I went to work for Nichols, he lived upstairs, had an apartment upstairs over the offices of the garage. It run from Ann Street to Lewis Street, right by the side of the Christian Church. They've torn it down now.
Wasn't Biscuit Lee killed but on St. Clair Street, or did he kill somebody?
It was one of the biggest garages in Frankfort. In fact, he had the first garage in Frankfort, and it was kind of behind in that Elk Alley, behind the old Capitol Hotel, or at the side of the old Capitol Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And he moved from there over to where T-Boat Marine is now, and was there for a while, and then he moved to Broadway, where Charlie Duvall's garage was. Stayed there for a while, and right before the First World War, he bought an old liver stable on Ann Street, and they remodeled it and made a garage out of it. And he was there until he sold out on account of his health in 38. And that's when Walter Blythe and I went down on Washington.
Someone told me on Sunday afternoons that the Salvation Army would march down into the bottom.
They had a Salvation Army band, 5 or 6 pieces, trombone, trumpet, probably a bass and a trombone. And they played Battle Hymn of the Republican, Onward Christian Soldiers and stuff like that on the corners. March down in the bottom and play down there for a while. They just played all over town. It was a very active group.
That's all I remember. Go ahead.
Doc Vogler was bootlegging down there.
Yeah?
He had a place. I was sitting there one day talking to him. And there was fellas that'd come get a half a pint or something. I never seen any money change hands at all. One guy would take off his overcoat, Doc would hang it on the wall. That paid for his bottle, you know. He was supposed to come back later on and get his overcoat, but there was no money that exchanged hands at all. There was, nobody didn't have any money, you know. No.
Who controlled the politics down there? Who was Follis telling
Follis
them how to vote?
Follis controlled most of
it. He was in charge.
Was it considered wet? Did they buy your vote with a drink then?
That election day always caused trouble in the bottom. Somebody got killed election day.
In city politics, the mayor couldn't succeed himself, so Dr. Coleman and D.D. Smith traded about. One of them would be mayor one time, and the other would be mayor the next time. They just swapped it back and forth. And we was under a councilman form of government. They had 12 councilmen. And generally, Pat Sullivan, after later years, Pat Sullivan controlled most of that.
Of course, Pat was in politics way up high.
He was.
If you wanted to work for the state, you had to see
had no
Pat.
Pat. That's right. And I always liked Mr. Pat.
He was always found.
I think he was fair. If he was your enemy, he wouldn't do anything to help you. But he has helped a whole lot of people in Frankfurt.
Mm. I tell you, looking back, the crawl wasn't bad at all.
No. They had no business ever spending any money down there. If they were going to do anything, what they should have done is gone in there, and the people that needed help, helped them. The ones that owned rental property that was taking the rent and sticking it in their pocket and letting their property go down, they should have forced them to fix it up. If they needed help, helped them with it on a land lease deal or something.
Jim, when did you come to Frankfurt?
I came in 78 as an intern with the state, so I missed all of it. Was long
See,
gone.
Downtown Frankfurt, especially on a Saturday, I mean, this is going back into the 60s, was a flourishing place. St. Clair. But whenever they came up with the idea to put that downtown mall in,
that burned it.
That killed it. You know, it killed the dime store that was down there where everybody came.
Well, we had two dime stores. We had Woolworth's and Newberry's.
But when the mall was put in, it was just Newberry's had burned.
Yeah.
Wasn't any dime store.
That's where they've got the parking garage now.
Mm-hmm. But at one time, there was two 10-cent stores and a theater. And a half a dozen restaurants, and a hardware store,
Collins,
and
a couple pool rooms.
Davis.
What was the one across the street from I Davis?
Pub.
I'll tell you the thing that I remember. We didn't shoot fireworks on the 4th of July. We shot them on Christmas.
Yeah.
In St. Clair Street on Christmas Eve was, man, there was fireworks going off all over the place. You remember that?
Yeah.
I never thought about shooting fireworks on 4th of July.
Most of your doctors and lawyers were in the McClure building. But UC's had a restaurant on Main Street. They lived up over their restaurant.
Cecil Powell
came along later.
Yeah, Cecil was in Lewis LeCount's old furniture store. Lewis LeCount run a furniture store and a undertaking establishment there for years. He took Lyman Grimm's place.
Cecil's mother was a bootlegger. She had two boys.
Pascal and Cecil.
Yeah, Pascal. And she was a bootlegger down on the corner of Broadway and Washington Street. And as you went just around the corner there, well, there was a building set up and it had two garage doors and you walked in. Well, she would hand you the booze down through the floor. And of course, if anybody raided her, well, she had an opportunity to dump it all out, you know, in the sink upstairs. But you didn't come in contact with her other than reach and get the bottle.
You paid him and she'd give you the whiskey.
Yeah.
Mm. So
her name
things,
was...
Funny things went on.
What was her name now? Boy, my memory's poor. I wish mine was sharp as yours.
Who were the Italians down in around the bottom there? Didn't they run...
Tony Papa and...
Fruit stores?
No, that...
Ice cream.
Tony Papa was an ice cream
He
man.
Made his ice cream right down there, and they come out with this federal thing where they prohibited him from calling it ice cream because it didn't have any cream in it. And he just changed right off right quick to frozen products.
There's a story in here in this paper. He fell off a horse and was hurt real bad or something at one time. But I had grandparents, grandmother and aunt lived up in Thornhill. And I was just a little bitty kid. We'd come home for a week or two. But he would drive a truck up in, what was that, Swigert Avenue?
Yeah.
Lived on. But you didn't go out there and get a cone. I remember the first time, because I was used to living up east, I knew what ice cream was, and you went to a store or something, you know, and they give you a dip or something. My aunt gave me a bowl and a dime or something, and I went out there and he filled up the bowl.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of surprising.
Well, there was three vendors in town, Tony Papa and Joe Papa and Johnny Pardee. Johnny lived up top of Bonob Hill. He cut ice off of his pond in the wintertime and stored it in a cellar to freeze his ice cream with. He had his own cows that he milked to make ice cream with and froze his own ice cream. Joe Papa bought most of his, and I think Tony bought most of his stuff, but they froze their own ice cream. And they always had strawberry and vanilla and chocolate. And occasionally they'd drift over into seasonal stuff like peach or something like that.
But you could buy a penny cone.
Yeah.
You could buy an ice cream cone for a penny.
And they started, Joe and Tony, both named Papa, and they both come from the same town in Italy. And they wasn't any relation to each other at all. And they both settled in Frankfurt, and both of them was in the ice cream business. They started out with push carts, and then went from push carts to horse-drawn wagons. And then they had Wallace blacksmith shop, made one of them, I don't know which one, a regular ice cream wagon.
That
you put
Tony,
your stuff down here and everything, and had windows that opened, and you served the customers out of the windows. And Wallace made Joe and Tony both wagons like that. And Tony graduated to a Ford truck with a body like that on it.
That's the one I
remember.
Hey, you know, I remember when Home Street East Main was all brick.
Yeah.
And when they first blacktopped East Main, the hill, going up the hill, I came down there with a team of horses and a wagon. And of course, the way that you had to put the brakes on, well, you just went out and you had a chain and you locked one wheel.
Yeah.
So I cut a groove in their new blacktop all the way from the top of the hill all the way down to the bottom. And I never will forget. I couldn't understand why they was all so mad at me, you know. They were talking about, oh, you've run the blacktop, see.
That wasn't the best blacktop in the world.
I had cut this groove all the way from the top of the hill all the way down where that wheel was sliding, see. Of course, you lock a wheel, well, it's just scooting along, see, and it's got a steel rim on it, and that blacktop that they use. And of course, the blacktop that they put on the roads, well, they sprayed that with tar, and when that stuff was freshly sprayed, well, boy, it was just like being on ice, you know.
Still
you'd go around and around.
Well, you remember Bacon's blacksmith shop?
Yeah, I remember Bacon's blacksmith
where
shop.
Where the Keppel Avenue Bridge is now.
I remember Wallace Bramble, too. He used to fool around there.
Yeah.
Tell him about, was it Jess Neal's first car with the wooden wheels or something?
Everything used to have wooden wheels. Had wood spoke wheels.
Jess Neal bought a Dodge Straight 8 the year that they come out with a Straight 8. That was eight cylinders in a line.
Yeah.
You know. And I had Pansy's father, and I was coming from Lexington. And it used to be a big S-turn right there at For Sales.
Yeah.
You know, very big S-turn. Well, I was a young fella, and I was driving it real fast. And when I got into that turn, it rained a little bit. Well, this thing just spun around and around and back in set over in the ditch. Well, I got out and looked at it, and of course these wooden spokes was all sheared off and splintered up. And I got it back up in the road, and I took a hammer and I drove them spokes back about where they should be, you know, and some of them was actually completely broke off, you know, one end of them, and I drove them back.
Whittled them out round where they went in the rim.
And I'd taken that thing back to Jess's and put it in the garage, and I didn't say anything to him at all. And the next morning he got in that old car and went down Home Street. Well, you know the streetcar track used to go down through them bricks, you know.
Yeah.
And there was always a groove between the rail and the bricks. You know?
Yeah.
So he got into that groove and he went to get out of it or something, and one wheel broke down.
Uh-oh.
It just collapsed, you know. Well, he come back and he called me Wenzel all the time. He said, Wenzel, you better quit driving that automobile so fast. He said, it's got rotten wheels. I never forget that.
Brand new car.
Oh, gosh. I've really enjoyed myself. You all have quite a...
Well, I had I don't know what ever become of it, but I had a tool to tighten up the spokes in them old wood spoke wheels, and I've got a half a dozen wheel pullers to pull the back wheels that the fella that I worked with when I first went to work for the garage made on a lathe up there. His name was Jack Wardell. He was first mechanic in Louisville. And he come to Frankfort and went to work for my uncle.
I remember when you had that old wrecker.
Yeah.
Had a bell on it.
Yeah.
Ding, ding.
Is that the bell you got downstairs?
No. No, it had an old streetcar bell on it.
But you could ride a streetcar from Thornhill into Frankfort, up around the Capitol, and all the way back for a dime, was it?
Yeah. And out as far as the Green Mill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or you could go the interurban to Lexington.
Yeah. That's one thing that they shouldn't have ever stopped.
Abandoned, yes.
That old interurban come from Lexington, and the people that work for the state and live in Lexington could have been using it and made good use out of it.
Mm.
And they could have put them out right up in front of the Capitol that went up, right up Todd Street. And they could have got out right there and walked up to the Capitol. And with the exception of from Frankfort to Shelbyville, if they had ever put it in there, you could have gone from Lexington to Indianapolis, because you could get on interurban at Shelbyville and go to Indianapolis.
It was a mistake to abandon the interurban
system.
Yes, sir,
it sure was.
But you know,
I like
there come a time
I like
when they were looking for gas leaks in the pipes. under Home Street there.
Yeah.
And they were drilling holes down, and as soon as they discovered a leak, well, they would light it. It was just, there was lights, fires burning all up Home Street, you know. And finally they drilled a hole into a cavity or something that was full of gas, oh, no. And when they lit that thing, it blowed out all them bricks and the rails and the whole business. But it was just like them fires we had over in the Middle East, or in, yeah. You know, it would burn as long as there was gas coming out of there, and as soon as it hit the air, it would mix and it would burn. They blowed a tremendous hole out.
Jim, I'm sure if you wanted to come back sometime, they may even have a couple of buddies around that may